Today is Tuesday, September 27th. I'm here in Victoria at the beautiful Royal Theatre with Tanya Howard, who is a dancer with the National Ballet of Canada. So welcome to Victoria.
Thank you.
You're part of the National Ballet's 60th anniversary tour right now.
That's right. A very exciting time to be a part of the ballet.
Where all have you been so far?
We started off in Calgary, moved on to Edmonton, spent a couple of shows in Vancouver, and now we're in Victoria, after which we'll go to Nanaimo and finish it up in Winnipeg.
Great. Good. Mm-hmm. Is this your first tour with the company?
No, this is not. So it's actually great to come back to places. We tend to have our favorite brunch places in certain cities, and it's so great to come back to a place and be on tour, but somehow have a little bit of familiarity. Mm-hmm. So it's always exciting.
Oh, good. Good. So where in Victoria are you familiar with some of the places?
We always go to the Otter Grill, which I think is the cutest little place, and we spend our mornings there having a breakfast and watching the planes land and the boats come in after a very early morning fishing trip, I'm sure. I always think that's so uniquely Victoria, and it's really close to our hotel too, so it's a perfect pit stop.
Good. I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about, it sounds like such an exciting career and so on, but it's the culmination of decades of work. So how did you get interested in ballet?
It's a culmination of work, but it's also a certain element of good fortune, being in the right place at the right time, having yourself ready to be open to different opportunities, whether you see them for what they are or for what they will become. So it's a huge compilation of a lot of different elements, I feel. I started at a very, very young age, and I had zero interest, but I think my mother really needed 45 minutes to herself, so she sent me off to ballet, and I remember making excuses as to why I didn't want to go that day or why I didn't want to dance, and it wasn't until later that I don't know if I enjoyed it because I was somewhat good at it at that age or if I really saw what I see now in it. Because, you know, you start something for one reason and you continue doing it for a whole nother reason. So I was very young. Like I said, I think I was 4. And then at 14, I chose to go to an art school in Johannesburg in South Africa. And sort of from there, it opened my eyes to what it could be like, what it would take, and you know, what I would need to sacrifice or where I would need to put myself to sort of get to this career.
So how do you go from Johannesburg to Toronto? What was the route?
This is where my story has the complete element of being in the right place at the right time. I was training for a competition in London, the Adeline Genet Awards, and my school had closed for the December holidays, our big summer holiday break, and I needed to keep training. And I had heard that there was going to be a Jacchetti summer school in Johannesburg weeks prior to this competition, and I'm trained as RAD, so that's already a conflict of interest. And I approached the faculty and told them why I would want to do the summer school, just to, you know, keep in shape. And they allowed me to go, and Mavis Staines, who is the director of the National Ballet School, was on the faculty. Hmm. And at the end of that week, the two of us connected, and that was my sort of tie-in to Toronto.
So you came as a student of the school?
I did. Back then they had a program called IDP, Intensive Dance Program, which they've sort of changed over the years and refined a little bit, but it was essentially a post-high school bridging year between before going into a company and sort of after grade 12. So I joined that class for a year, and from there did the National Ballet Apprenticeship Program audition, and that was 12 years ago.
Wow.
So, yeah. It really just sort of happened for me in that regard. But of course, it was up to me to decide whether I wanted to stay here, whether I would go to that audition, how I would choose to play my cards once they were dealt to mm-hmm. me. So
mm-hmm. So why the National Ballet? Why stay with the National Ballet?
I was young. I was 18 and very keen to travel and very keen to see new things. And when I got to Toronto, I loved the city. And
what did you love about it?
Well, it was, I'm originally from a small town, so it's really the dream to get to a big city. But it was a big city that felt somehow safe, and I could walk everywhere, or I could use public transit. In Johannesburg, it's not that easy. You have to have a car, and you have to know where you're going, and you know. So it wasn't. It was just a freedom, and you know, it allowed me to slowly become independent, which I felt in Johannesburg it was a little bit sink or swim, right from the get go. But I just loved. I remember I came here in September. And the evenings were so cool and still warm. I was surprised at how warm it still was. And I just loved the people I met at the ballet school instantly. I made friends I still have today. And there was just something about the city that I felt, this is where I love to be. And then, of course, being at the National Ballet School gave me a chance to see the company. And back then I saw the company do Terra Firma, which is a James Kadalka piece. And I was blown away. And I knew instantly that this is where I wanted to end up.
What about the piece was so attractive?
It's a very large, it's a piece for a very large ensemble, I guess, because they are there's a huge corps de ballet and very powerful, and I just remember their lines and the precision, and then within that there were, you know, solos and pas de deux and stuff, and just the precision, and the dancers looked so amazing. I just something about that, and this was now maybe 14 years ago, and something just clicked. I don't know if I would remember any of the choreography, but I just remember that night feeling like if I could do that, I would be so satisfied.
Mm-hmm. And so can you talk a little bit about your career within the company? Because you've been very successful.
Yes, I've been very fortunate, I feel, in terms of the repertoire that was chosen throughout these, you know, 12 to 14 years. There's always been something for me, and there's always been something for me to work towards or to excel in. So I really, really feel very fortunate that I sort of made that right call mm-hmm. back then, because it's difficult. You don't always know where the rep is going to lead or which direction it's going to take. And so I started out, I felt right out of the gates, we did great stuff. My first performance with the National Ballet was La Bayadere.
Wow. You know, it's trial by fire.
A little bit. But just, like, if you ever do something like Bayadere or Swan Lake or Giselle, like, the strength in numbers with the other girls behind you, in front of you, next to you, doing the same thing, you just sort of get carried by the group. And I loved that. I loved what we had as a core. So, and then immediately, you know, in 1999, we did Swan Lake, which was a new version. So it was very exciting to be, that was my first time being in a room while something was being created.
What's that like?
Like nothing I can tell you. It's very cool. Just like, you know, that man walked in here and nobody knows what he's going to do, and you're seeing him tell people for the first time. There's nothing like it. And then to see a piece like that have longevity and have relevance and have it created a bit of a stir because of how expensive it was. And, there are some people, why would we ever need a new Swan Lake? We have the ones we have, and, and then just to be a part of that is incredible. I remember I went out to the front. We were at the Hummingbird Center at that stage, and I went out front to the big marquee, and I had my picture taken next to the Swan Lake World Premiere, and I was like, I'm like 19, and I'm made a world premiere, and it was just, that was not lost on me at all, even back then. So it's just been a slow progression. And then also once you're in a company for a while, ballets start coming back. So either you do the same role or you get something added on that's a little better. And that's always been great to sort of work towards something mentally, maybe, maybe secretly, maybe you tell people that my ambition would be next time this ballet comes around, I would love to do that part, or, and then to have those things come true for you, or to learn, okay, I need to accept that maybe this was not my chance to do that, or sometimes you do get the chance and injury happens, or, there's a lot to learn that way too.
Is there a particular role that you've really wanted that you have gotten specifically?
I'm going to sound like I have a horseshoe or a little, Four Seasons, the summer pas de deux, I actually didn't know that I wanted it until I did it and I had my show and I was like, that's the feeling I've always wanted. And this choreography and this music and this ballet as a whole was what gave me that feeling.
Is Kadalka as well?
Yes.
Yes.
I started my career while Kadalka was our director, and I got a lot of my first starts with him. So I think a lot of my early memories involve a lot of his choreography and a lot of his
And he's a great
his
choreographer.
Influence. Yes. Yeah.
So, tell me what kind of a dancer you are. What do you like to do? What do you see as your strengths?
I like to do good dancing. I think sometimes my colleagues might see me as a little more modern. I've also been very blessed with long legs and a short torso, so I do look like a ballerina in a tutu, so I've been fortunate that way to get like Snow Trio in our Nutcracker is just beautiful. That's what you train for. That's that moment when she's just standing there and the curtain opens and you're on point and you're in your white sparkly tutu. So it's hard for me to say exactly. Balanchine's Don Q, which we do, and I was fortunate enough to do the lead in that, is incredible. It's such a mental journey the whole way through. The role of Kate in The Second Detail, which is a role I do, probably top three, and it's completely modern. It's barefoot, your hair is not quite up, not quite down. You're in this very geometric Issey Miyake dress, and it's so otherworldly. And I remember the first time we got coached on that, the coach said to us, you're kind of like lightning, and that was a lot of the input we got for that. And the rest she just sort of let us go in the corner and figure it out and hear the music. And this time when we put The Second Detail back together, somebody else came and he showed us a picture of a a chimpanzee, like a really, you know, primal animal. And he was like, that's the big picture of the solo, you know. And it's just, it's incredible to have that kind of freedom on stage and to have such abstract things, because normally you would just think, just, you know, try and be the little figurine ballerina in a jewelry box and just your prettiest smile, and to be in a company that allows for both extremes of that is beyond what I could have asked for in a career, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you've worked outside of the company as well. You've done work with people like Peggy Baker.
Yes, I have.
The Choreographers Trust. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That was incredible. I met Peggy Baker at the National Ballet School. And so we've had this little on-again, off-again relationship, depending on whether I could, you know, might fit it into my schedule. And she is incredible. She is just a force. And you know that the minute you walk into a room with her, you can feel she is something special. There is something special about everything she says. And when I did the Choreographer's Trust with her, she actually encouraged us to keep a journal while, because that was like no other process I've ever done. That was 1 week, and we learned the solo on Monday, and we performed it on Friday.
Wow.
And
if I could just interrupt, this is Peggy Baker giving you a choreographic work, one of her choreographic works.
That's right.
Entrusting you with that work.
Yeah. She's, I mean, that whole concept of her to do that, to pass on her language and her dance, is incredibly generous. So even just the thought of that is so vast, and then to be a recipient of it is, you know, mind-blowing. And just the way she is, I don't know if you've met her.
No, but I know her work very well. Yeah. She's a lovely, a lovely person, very generous.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, she really is. So, I've just always loved my my interaction with her. And I do another piece, but it's interesting, it's a James Kadelka piece that he did for Peggy. And it's a Romeo and Juliet before parting. Mm. So essentially it's just the moment after they've spent the night and they're waking up and, you know, they're having all their doubts and thoughts and foreshadowings, and it's a beautiful, beautiful pas de deux. And initially, she wanted to do it and do it in a program of hers. And so she chose myself and a fellow dancer, Patrick Lavoie. And we've since brought that back into our company repertoire.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I've also done it with Andrew Barashko and the Art of Time Ensemble. Mm-hmm. So it's just led to so many different avenues and opportunities.
Is it hard on your body to move from one kind of movement vocabulary to another?
It is. Like I remember with the Choreographer's Trust, that week was, I have never been in that kind of pain, ever. Because with Peggy, because it was so intense, and with Peggy you would just wanted to do it full out all the time, and sort of, I mean, there was an exceptional time pressure too. But with our company's versatility, I think there is a lot that becomes muscle memory. But there's a lot of, there's difference, slight differences in, say, how you would warm up. Or some people, it depends on your own head. Some people would do, you know, a ballet class, even if they were doing Marie Chouinard or Sleeping Beauty. But I find I like to do in my warm-up what I'm going to do on stage. So I would, if I were doing something more modern, I would roll around on the floor more, you know, just loose, you know, warm up that way. But it's certainly hard, and it is in this program, to go from barefoot into pointe shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a whole different level of your ankle, of your hips. So what's good is that everyone will have their little 10-minute warm-up. Everything's condensed. So if you had to do that, go from barefoot to pointe shoes, you would just sort of do your releves and do, you know, pick what you need to pick from your warm-up and just sort of like zero your body in on being lifted and held in a pointe shoe, you know, that is obviously different from being mm-hmm. from being barefoot.
So can you talk us through a typical day when you're performing and when you're not performing?
Okay, when I'm not performing, my mornings are crazy because I have a 2.5-year-old. So it's quite busy and making lunches and trying to get a good breakfast in for everyone. And then I sort of, once I get to work, it all sort of slows down and gets back to a sort of my normal pace. And then we do class for 1 hour 15, which is optional for us, but I think the older you get, the more maybe ritualistic you become, and the older your body is, so mm-hmm. You would need to do class more. And then we have a 3-hour rehearsal block, 1 hour lunch, and another 3-hour rehearsal block. And then I go home, dinner, dog, baby, the whole thing. And I normally like to like shower or bath at the end of the day just to kind of get back to normal, reasonable hour to bed. and then that's it. And then when we're in performance, we usually start later in the day because we end later. So sometimes it's good to fit in like a yoga or a gyrotonics or Pilates or something like that before. And then we usually start at about noon. And when we're in performance, we're only allowed a 2-hour rehearsal block during the day. So we would have our class as usual and then rehearse either. What we would do is rehearse the cast that's not on that night, so that you don't have to do things both mm-hmm. twice mm-hmm. in the day, except on a dress rehearsal. And then, or we'd rehearse a different program. We'd rehearse something that we were doing the next week. So then that is sometimes a bit different. You'd have to get your mindset sort of organized. And then we usually, a lot of us go out and get a lunch or we bring a dinner from home and we just kind of hang out in the green room, which I always like, because once I go to my change room, then I kind of start, like I don't listen to music or anything. Some people like their iPods, but I find I enjoy that social dinner hour. And then once I leave that, it's sort of my time to just sit and put on my makeup. And
what are you thinking? How do you prepare yourself mentally for a performance?
Mostly, I think I'm trying not to think about it, because I find I work better with everything in its place. So right then, I would be doing my makeup and my hair and things like that. And I usually work backwards to give myself enough time. And then once I get to the studio, that's when I do whatever warm-up I need, depending on what I'm doing, a bar or something like that, and then go through my moves. If there's one specific move you want to keep trying, or sometimes you get superstitious too. Like, I remember for some reason in Swan Lake, I would never do the entrance step in the studio. I would practice jumping in the studio, but never that step. I'd always just do that step on stage. So you get into little things like that too. But I find the costume and the scenery of being backstage and being in a theater and hearing the half-hour call announcement, that is sort of ritual enough for me. So I try not to get too clogged mentally on thinking about that step, or should I run a little further on this thing, you know, move that diagonal over a foot so I can fit it all in, or I just try and space it out well.
What's in the future for you? Are you thinking ahead in terms of where you'd like your career to go, and then what, you know, what next?
You know, whenever people used to ask me that, I would always say, I'm so happy with the way things are right now that I never think ahead too far, because I just, like, I would think ahead to the next season if it's been announced, you know, think what you're dancing, and but now that I'm over 30 and I have a kid, you're almost forced, or it happens that you start thinking a little further. I don't know. A lot of my colleagues who have retired, going back to school. So there's a whole avenue there that's sort of open, I guess. I would like to have more children. I would like to try and dance long enough for my daughter to really have a memory of me dancing. And I know that sounds a bit like I would be doing it for her. And I've tried that before in my career, doing it for other people, and it never works. So I would, it would essentially be for me. Mm-hmm. But I think that would be really neat if she could remember, you know, real memories of her coming to a theater like this, or, you know, seeing me on stage, or I think, so for now, I think I would like to dance as far as my body would let me, because I think there is still a lot of dance left in me. In terms of the rep too, there's always something too, maybe that you didn't think would suit you, you know, when you're 20, and 10 years later you see that same role in a different light, or you've had different experiences like I have had with Peggy Baker, and sort of made me look at modern dance in a different light. Or so there are always surprises, and sort of always something worth hanging in there for. So
good. Well, you have been very generous with your time.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you never get asked in an interview that you always think, oh, I'd like to say that. Why didn't someone ever ask me that?
Oh, wow.
What's a common misperception that people have about what it's like to be a dancer, or, you know, that you'd like to correct?
You know, I think people think that we're very showy, or because of what we do, you know, we're particularly confident, or and it's really not. It's a lot about the audience just seeing our personal journeys, really. You know, it's not so much like, come and see me, I'm so, you know, amazing or whatever. There's a lot of personal stuff going on stage all the time. And I think it would be nice for an audience member to maybe think of that the next time they come to a show, instead of just sort of taking at face value what the choreography wants them to take from the piece, but just to sort of know that those are individuals, and those are mothers, and those are people who could be heartbroken or really sad, or, you know, living thousands of kilometers away from their parents, or, you know, lots of, because there's so many elements that make up a person. And not to take away from the escapism that theater offers too, but that we're just real people who happen to have this incredible job.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alana. Thanks.